Welcome to the RevRec Gals podcast, where two consultants with over 30 years combined experience share stories about the implementation and challenges of revenue recognition accounting. I'm Susan.
And I'm Natasha.
And we are the RevRec Gals. Welcome to this episode of the RevRec Gals. We are moving on to the final step of ASC 606, the timing of revenue. The primary two are...
The guidance calls it at a point of time and then over time. There's this process that you have to go through of bifurcating all of your performance obligations to decide, is this recognized over time or is it recognized at a point of time based on how you transfer control of the particular performance obligation? That can be a complicated assessment. It sounds easy, but it's not. And I think we touched on this in a previous episode, this idea of particularly software versus term license versus SaaS, and determining what is truly the nature of your performance obligation. So that step two process of what are your performance obligations, that process is so important to determine the timing, which is part of step five. It's funny because I think people don't always recognize, why do we keep talking about the nature of the performance obligation? Why does it matter? And it matters throughout the process, but you get to this point where you actually have to recognize the revenue and what is that pattern of transfer? You go back to step two and say, what's the nature of our performance obligation?
Just starting with the point in time, there's also, you talked about that timing of transfer of ownership. And so if you have something like hardware, then you have to decide, is it transferring when it gets onto the truck off of your dock, or is it transferring when it gets to the customer? Or if you're shipping it overseas, is it somewhere in between, like after it goes through customs or before it goes through customs? You have to figure that out so that you know, when can I actually take this revenue? And a lot of times companies will have an assessment at the end of the month where they have to look at any transactions that may be going overseas or that have these Incoterms that are anything other than upfront transfer, and figure out, do they have to defer any revenue into the next period?
I think what we normally refer to this as is like the FOB shipping point versus FOB destination. And certainly for this type of company where you do have the physical shipment of goods, it's always a good idea to be tracking this, because to your point, at the end of the quarter, do you want to go through every single one of your transactions? No, you want to go through the transactions that were FOB destination. Those are the ones that are at risk for not having arrived to your customer by your cutoff date. Whereas the FOB shipping point, hopefully you have very clear records and indicators of what shipped out and what didn't. So then you can look at a subpopulation and say, okay, let's look at our FOB destination. Which of these did not meet the cutoff? And maybe you have a very specific detailed process depending on how high the dollar value is of each of your individual shipments or transactions. But often what I've seen is maybe sort of a high level policy that people take around that. One company specifically for certain regions, they had a lot more visibility as to when something actually cleared customs and when it actually showed up to their customers. But for some of their customers in certain regions, there was no visibility as to when it actually showed up to the customer. It was kind of a nightmare to figure out, when do we actually start recognizing revenue for this? Like, what is our documentation that it has arrived at the customer other than them saying, hey, we just received our package?
Yeah, I do see that where a company will have a policy to say, if it goes to Europe, on average, it takes 5 days. Or if it goes to Asia, on average, it takes 4 days or whatever the case may be.
Which shows that your policy might be different by region too. Maybe, you know, if you have enough international volume, maybe you break it out by region and say, hey, for these regions, we're only going to look at shipments from the last 5 days of the quarter. But for these other regions that, you know, maybe it takes a little bit longer, maybe the customs process is more extensive, maybe you look at a bigger window.
Yeah. And even in the US, they may have, you know, different by what part of the country.
So that's point in time. The other piece of that is the software that may be embedded on that hardware, another sort of at a point delivery, and maybe they get delivered at the same time, software that's downloaded. One fun one that this idea, this stand ready to deliver. what happens if someone purchases software, but they don't actually download it?
I see that quite a bit. And what I tell my clients is, as long as you sent them that notification and your servers are up, you've actually given them the ability to take the software as soon as you sent that email. You have to have two things. You have to have one, a valid email, and then two, you have to have your servers available.
Yeah. So this idea that the license keys have been delivered, it's up to the customer. It's in the customer's hands. They're empowered to do what they need to do to get the software. I remember as an auditor getting those emails. Are these legitimate email addresses?
Right. Yeah. I remember looking to see, did any of these email addresses bounce back?
So yeah, that's another at a point in time delivery. So what about on the overtime side?
So if you're lucky, overtime's pretty clear and they have in the contract stated, here's your start date and here's your end date, and you have your service period. Now it does get a little more complicated because we talked about termination for convenience, in which case the contract may say 3 years, but you maybe only have a 1 year true contract to start with, or a monthly, or whatever the contract terms are. But generally, if you have a start and end date, it's pretty easy. I do see quite a bit where people will have an implied period. So I have a hardware client who, when they ship it, there's a little bit of a delay before the customer actually will install and sign into the service. And also, a lot of it's going through resellers. So they just give a standard like 30 or 60 day implied period. Because during that implied period, you may not use technical support, but you have the right to any updates and upgrades. They take the shipping date plus the service period plus the implied period.
Got it. So you're saying that in the case of, let's say, a term license, they might have purchased a 12-month term license with support, but it might take a while for it to actually get delivered to the client. Maybe there's a reseller involved, maybe there's implementation. And during that period of time, you're still providing the updates and upgrades associated with any sort of maintenance or support, but they may not actually be using it. And so you have this implied period of updates and upgrades that are included at the upfront end of that contract. So maybe you recognize it over a 13-month period versus a 12-month period.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. So this is all referring to this idea of time-based transfer. So it's over time and there's a contract term, and we're taking the position that the product or service is being transferred evenly over that period of time, over whatever the contract term is, which is my favorite kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you just have to decide, are we going to do 30-month days for every month? Are we going to do 28 days for February and 31 days for May? You know, like, those are your biggest decisions.
Well, it's interesting because I remember way back when, like, if you had a 12-month contract, you would do a full month, and you really can't do that. The guidance requires you to do it on a daily basis. However, you can look at each month as a 30-day month because it creates an immaterial adjustment, especially when you're talking about a full year of revenue. Or what I have seen some people do is the mid-month. So if it's in the first 15 days of the month, they'll take a full month. If it's in the last half of the month, they'll postpone it to the following month. If you do that, you may have to do an analysis for your auditors to show that the variance is immaterial, especially because what I find is you kind of have this hockey stick at the end of the month or the end of the quarter where you get this increase of transactions. Are you skewing it a little bit too much into that month?
Yeah, the mid-month convention, I've done that before where you set up that analysis showing, hey, even if we had done it perfectly to the day, it wouldn't have made a difference because there might be a contract that was on the 16th. So it's almost, you know, a full month, almost a half of a month, but then there's lots of contracts on the 30th or the 31st that really wouldn't make a difference. And it all sort of evens out if you have contract volume evenly distributed. To your point, that hockey stick might skew it a little bit, but usually it's not material. I don't mind just doing it by the day. You know, why not? It's just an Excel formula either way. But yes, different companies do it different ways. So you might get a little bit of variation there.
Now, have you seen any customers using like a milestone or other kind of timing for revenue?
I think the transfer of control, it goes back to that nature of your performance obligations. You know, the methodology we were just talking about is really based on this idea that the delivery of the products or service is happening over a period of time. Maybe it's a stand ready performance obligation where, you know, in the case of customer support, for example, you have a responsibility to have a call center available for people during specified hours throughout the period of time. Whether they call or not, doesn't matter. You still have to have them available to call. And so that's the idea that you measure it based on the number of days over the contract term, because as each day elapses, you've delivered or transferred control of that service each day. That's for something that happens sort of evenly over time. It's stand ready. In other scenarios, I see something where maybe there is an actual count of what you're providing. So whether it be a particular unit of measurement, maybe it's hours, nodes is another one. And it doesn't so much matter what you are selling as it matters how you are selling it. If you are selling a number of items that you're drawing down from, that's a pretty good indicator that control does not transfer necessarily over time. Control transfers as you draw down from that balance. So if you purchase a volume up front that you draw down from over time, how you use it all of a sudden matters. And so the number of hours you use, the number of nodes you use draws down from whatever that balance is you paid for up front, almost like a gift card, right? You know, you draw down from the balance and as you use it, control is transferred. So it's still something that's recognized over time, but it's not measured in days. It's measured based on the actual usage.
Those I find are hard to manage.
Well, it's a technical nightmare because depending on what you're measuring, you actually have to work really closely with engineering so that everyone's on the same page as to what is being used, how it's being tracked, and is there visibility from the customer perspective all the way to accounting? If accounting is going to send a balance, right? You know, here's your remaining balance or here's your invoice because you went over, you sure hope they're not going to be surprised by that. So then customer success is involved, product development is involved, because how do we, you know, have visibility to the customer? You also need this to somehow integrate into your systems. I mean, I could go on and on and on about usage-based usage-based models, and we could do a whole nother episode on that, because then you can also get into variable consideration, how you allocate variable consideration. But ultimately, this idea that you can measure the transfer of control in different ways is important. It'll impact your revenue timing. What about other forms you've seen? I think you mentioned milestones as another one you've seen.
Not recently. I haven't seen milestones so much.
I think they used to be more common when there was acceptance that played into it under 605.
It was really hard to measure the value of each of those deliverables.
I mean, I think these milestones still exist in the way that when you look at how you transfer control, there's this idea that you can have an input method or an output method. So when you think of maybe a fixed fee project, like a construction type project, you could use a measurement of hours as an indicator of how much progress you have made towards the completion. So you could call it the proportional performance method, where proportionately you provided 25 of 100 hours, so 25% of that fixed fee project, and that's how you recognize your revenue. Inputs could be lots of different things. Hours is the one that I've seen. And to that end, you know, maybe milestones as sort of an output could also be another measurement. So hours could be an input method of measuring your tracking towards completion. Milestones could be another method that is more of this external measure of how you are tracking towards the completion of a particular project. But to your point, Susan, coming up with a value to associate with each of those milestones, how much do you allocate to each of those milestones, is really challenging. I haven't seen one of those done recently, but I would imagine it makes sense for certain companies where you really feel like these milestones are really indicative of the progress towards completion and it's clear what that relationship is.
The times I've seen it, oftentimes it's tied to software deliverables. And so you really are then measuring, have they delivered the software? And that software has whatever SSP is related to it. So it's more of a software that requires that installation.
But I think there's this, maybe like it's a heavy-handed implementation. I think, you know, I think of construction type projects, the typical or obvious one is actual construction. But I think within the software environment, if you're talking about a company that sells hardware and software and services altogether, they might be selling a software solution, but there could be a pretty heavy-handed implementation. Even if there isn't customization, it could require a lot of work to actually implement it into the customer site. One that I saw a long time ago, is, for example, was hardware software being implemented into an airport, into their airport security system. That is a big project and must be done very carefully. And I guess there was probably some actual construction involved, but more importantly, there was a lot of planning, a lot of coordination, and the delivery. It was really the delivery of a solution being delivered, not just here's your hardware, here's your software, go install it.
And that's when you have to look at, is this professional services really a separate performance obligation, or is it combined with the solution that you're delivering?
So once again, you're back at step two. What are you actually selling? See, I told you it's very, I mean, you already knew, but I can't emphasize enough how important that step two is. And I think people want to skip right over, like, we know we sell. It's like, but are we sure we're really clear on what we sell? So, and I think professional services in general is another one where it really comes down to how are you selling it? It could be hourly, which is my favorite because it's straightforward, but often it's a bucket of hours. Maybe it's a period of time with a maximum number of hours. Maybe it's a solution with milestones and it's an approximate number of hours. You know, you have a specific deliverable, assessing all that and figuring out what's the best measure, what's the most representative of what this transaction includes.
Yeah, most often I've seen where they'll estimate how many hours are going to be involved and then track approximate completion as a percentage against that estimate. Because really, if you're doing a fixed fee professional services or a milestone, you want to generally get a feel for what margin you're selling it for. And so you're going to have some kind of underlying estimate going into the deal.
This is where, as revenue accountants, I just ask people, can we just sell the same way every time? Can we just decide as a business, you know, what we want to do, how we want to sell it? Because it's complicated. And to your point, coming up with this margin of what we think this project is going to have, you have to come up with processes for that. You have to come up with time tracking tools. You have to come up with estimation and reporting tools. How are those estimates being tracked internally within the professional services organization? And how are they being communicated to the accounting department in a way that accounting can include it in their records, which then can be reproduced for auditors? And that's a big undertaking. And I've seen that in organizations where you have sort of this performance project management department that they have this down. But for startups just starting out, this can be a pretty big lift to put something like that in place. That's where if you're going to do it, build it out. But going back and forth between different ways of selling it and not having clarity there, unless your professional services is truly immaterial, it's just a recipe for disaster. It's a lot of complexity without a lot of reward.
This concludes our preliminary discussion of the five steps of ASC 606, but it doesn't mean we don't have more to talk about. Tune in to future episodes where we dive deeper into topics such as contract modifications, material rights, and more. Please let others know about our podcast and LinkedIn profile. Feedback and topic suggestions are always welcome through LinkedIn or by emailing us at revrecgals@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. The examples discussed are based on specific company dynamics. Check in with your auditors before making changes to your current processes. Specializing in revenue recognition may result in employment for life. Please consult your friends and family before pursuing this career.